This is Gino the announcer, and you are listening to the Barbell Program Podcast with Peter and Alex. The bar is loaded.
Can we start over again? I had a stroke right now.
No. No worries, man. No worries. It's all good.
It's funny. Usually I'm not used to doing the first words because usually Alex does that. And now I'm completely messed up. Okay, Bryce. We're going to start again.
Sure.
Could you please be so kind and introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. So my name is Bryce Krawczyk. I'm a Canadian powerlifter and powerlifting coach. I own and operate a company called Calgary Barbell. We make a lot of YouTube content and coach a lot of lifters remotely and here in Calgary when we're not on lockdown. And yeah, I've been lifting for, I guess it's about 8 years now, competing for 8 years, lifting for probably closer to 10 or 12, and have been able to enjoy some competitive success, some world records and some medals at Worlds and stuff like that. So I've been around a little bit, both raw and equipped. And yeah, that's pretty much me.
Alex and I just talked a few minutes ago. You recently had your nationals and they went pretty well for you, didn't they?
Yeah, it went exceptionally well. And honestly, we were really lucky. I think had the competition been 2 days later, it may have all been canceled. But yeah, so I had an exceptional performance that day. I went 9 for 9 for the first time in equipment. That's been a goal of mine that I've been chasing for a while, as well as some of the numbers that I hit at that competition. I squatted and deadlifted both 400 kilos and was pretty damn happy about that. Yeah.
Yeah, you could be. And you should.
Yeah. So which are you more proud of, your deadlift or your squat in that competition?
I think the deadlift. The deadlift I was less sure about. I think the way my squat's been going since I've been, I moved up a weight class. So I used to compete in the 105 kilo weight class and now I'm competing in the 120 kilo weight class. And since I moved up a weight class, my squat has just been just going up and up and up. And I think there's probably more there still. But my deadlift, I actually had to fight with quite a bit after moving up a weight class to try to get it feeling good, feeling smooth again. So that was a bit of a struggle. And I've really been chasing the 400 kilo deadlift specifically. I feel like I've been pretty close a number of times. So to finally get that was pretty fulfilling.
But it looked really smooth. You know, I just watched it and it looked, first of all, I think this was one of the most technical perfect deadlifts in equipment I've ever seen.
So wow, was, thank you.
But like, it's just amazing, great. And it was, I think it was not your max on that day, but it was the correct decision to take the 400.
Yeah. Looking back, I kind of wish I would have gone 405 because then it would have pushed the other guys who broke my total record afterwards. Okay. Mind you, they were super heavyweights, but for about 10 minutes, I upped the highest drug-free total in Canadian history. And then a couple of guys that were super heavyweights that went to the next flight, they beat that by 5 kilos each.
Okay.
But what are you going to do? You can't see the future, right?
Yeah. No, you can't. But it was a really awesome deadlift, man. It was
thank you.
What brought you to powerlifting initially?
Initially, I just kind of started lifting weights because I was a skinny kid and I didn't want to be a skinny kid anymore. I think that's a pretty common story, right? Yeah. You just want to be jacked and look like the guys in the movies and stuff. And then after a while, I kind of really fell in love with training and lifting weights and just really, really enjoyed it. So I was kind of looking for a direction to head with training so that I had something to work towards and to motivate me. And bodybuilding didn't appeal to me. So the only other option that I saw aside from Olympic lifting, which seemed a lot tougher to access. I think there was a lot less Olympic lifting coaching where I was at, or maybe I was just lucky and ended up with powerlifting. But that was kind of how it worked out. I ended up ordering like Jim Wendler's 531 for powerlifting book off of Amazon and ran that for, I don't know, a year. And then did my first competition shortly after that. And Yeah, it was pretty cool. I fell in love with it very, very quickly. I think by the time the lights went up on my first squat in competition, I knew that this was something I was going to be doing for probably the rest of my life.
That's great.
It's funny that nearly every powerlifter starts with 5-3-1.
Yeah. I think around that time in like 2012, that was maybe the most well-known or maybe the most accessible program, other than like some Chico stuff, but that seemed really complex and you had to kind of like go through a bunch of spreadsheets and stuff like that. And for me at the time, that was not something I was interested in.
Yeah, Peter, what was the program you started with?
5-3-1. Actually, 5-3-1.
Yeah, it's almost universal.
Yeah, and after that, I think it was there's a free program from Mike on the RTS for Fiorum, this intermediate lift RTS stuff. Do you know that?
Yeah, definitely. I think when I started with Mike, he had me doing something similar to that template. I've never run that template specifically. I moved from 5-3-1 into some bastardization of 5-3-1 with like Smolov Jr. for my bench and a bunch of like Chad Wesley Smith's raw West Side stuff, just all like smashed into one program. I definitely just hurt myself and bombed out of my next meet.
But are you still working with Mike?
Yeah. So I've been with Mike since, I don't even know. It's probably been 5 years now, four or 5 years. And that was probably one of the best decisions I ever made with my powerlifting career. Even just getting a coach in general, the first guy or first few people who coached me, I learned a lot from everybody, but really saw some pretty incredible progress once I started working with Mike.
So yeah, we had it on the podcast 5 days ago.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah, that was he's still in the Netherlands nowadays, also locked down. So
yeah,
he wanted to move back to the US in, I think, early June. But yeah, let's have a look.
Yeah,
how it will work out.
See how that goes.
So you say that there's one major thing in powerlifting training, and it should be having a coach, right?
I think that's a big thing for sure. And like you look at guys like Mike and their self-coach. So I think it's a bit of a personality thing. For me, I would rather somebody else do that work for me and take that off of my mind. I think it's pretty easy when you're doing your own programming to do something like I did when I just like mushed all that stuff together. I was like, well, I want to do this and I want to do this and I want to do this. So I can just do it all at the same time, right? I obviously know a lot more about programming now and probably wouldn't do something so silly at this point. But I feel like if I were to program for myself, I would be much more likely to change things, to overthink things, to just end up spending a lot of time stressing about it. And I'd rather just kind of let somebody else handle that stress because they're a little bit removed from the situation.
Yeah. I think we absolutely, Peter and me are absolutely thinking the same. So it's kind of tough to make your own program. And I think the more you experience and the more you know, actually the harder it gets.
Yeah.
Because then, you heard about that and you hear about this and you read about that. And that sounds cool. And I think the pile of program put into one gets bigger.
Exactly.
When you started powerlifting, did you get right into equipped lifting or did you start at classic?
No, so when I started was kind of around that might have been one of the first years that there was a Raw Worlds or a Classic Worlds, was around that 2012 mark, if I'm not mistaken. So when I first started, I saw some people competing in equipment because of where I started in Canada here. There were some equipped lifters who are still some of the best equipped lifters in Canada, were competing at the same meets as me. But I had no experience with it. I trained more or less by myself, just kind of figuring things out. I went to my first powerlifting meet and went to bench press, and I was using a false grip. I was bringing my head up off the bench every rep, and my heels were up in the air. I was toe picking with my toes in the warm-up room, and somebody had to come up to me and be like, dude, you can't do any of that stuff when you go out there. So I was just flying solo at that point and figuring things out. So I was definitely classic, yeah, when I started.
Yeah, and what brought you to Equipped?
So we had a coaching summit here in Alberta, so in the province of Canada that I live in, and myself and a couple of other prominent coaches in Alberta presented, and we actually brought down Mike T and Bryce Lewis, and we had a big sort of conference, if you want to call it that. And one of the coaches from Alberta here, his entire presentation was all about Equipped lifting. So he showed us some equipment, like pass it around for us to kind of feel, because I feel like you can watch people in it and you can use a slingshot and be like, yeah, that's probably what a bench shirt feels like. But until you get one in your hands and you're like, holy crap, this is something very different. It kind of doesn't click. And he just showed some videos of these guys, these massive guys handling even more massive weights, and said, like, this is the average, this is the going rate in equipment. Like, people are handling these huge weights. I was dealing with a hip injury, and still to this day deal with it on and off. But that was, for me, something that I could maybe try that might make it a little easier on my hip and, you know, allow me to deload my raw lifts a little bit and still push really hard and lift heavy in a different sort of discipline. And it just, yeah, I mean, I tried out my first few sessions and immediately, again, just kind of fell in love with it. So
for me, there's one big thing in Equipped lifting. The thing is that when you're lifting Equipped, it's much more technical demanding than, for example, raw. But it's also so much heavier or more intense in the central nervous system. So you are a little bit in between. You have to train them like a technical lift as much or as often as you can. But on the other hand, you cannot do that because you are just fucked. I mean, after kind of heavy equipment, for example, a day, okay, you cannot do that the same on 2 days later or something like that. So, right. When you're doing playing tennis and you want to learn how to make the backhand or something like that, okay, you can hammer the backhand every day, and then you can be technical sound after some kind of weeks. But what about Equipped lifting? I mean, how do you schedule your training that you can get technical sound on the one hand, but on the other hand, you save your central nervous system from freaking out?
Yeah, so I mean that was a bit of a tough thing when I started, but again, obviously I was working with Mike, who's a very experienced Equipped lifter, so that my day one I would do my Equipped squat and Equipped bench, so basically most of an Equipped meet every Monday, and then Tuesday I would do my Equipped deadlift and just treat them like any other lift, and it sucked and it really beat me up for maybe a couple of weeks. And then after a while, I got pretty adapted to being in my equipment every week and doing, you know, three singles and a set of five kind of thing. So it's a fair bit of work. And even more so, you know, we got into some blocks where I was doing four or five back off sets and full equipment straps up, which I think a lot of times when I talk to people, are you crazy? But I think, not only have I personally always kind of been pretty adaptable to that kind of thing, but I think that the skills component of it and being able to learn it, like you were talking about there, Alex, I think was a really big thing for me to have that frequency and that volume and that ability to practice it. I also, you know, bear in mind I wasn't in like super comp tight equipment. I could get to depth with less than 100%. You know what I mean? So,
okay.
It was also a sort of sliding scale of becoming more comfortable in the equipment, getting tighter, more aggressive stuff, more comfortable, tighter, more aggressive stuff, in terms of the equipment anyways. So I think that also allowed me to get a little bit more practice in it without, you know, the suits and shirts that I wear now. Like, there's no way I'm bringing 100% of my raw bench anywhere close to my chest. You know, like I don't even bother putting on my shirt for that. So things have changed since I learned and kind of got into the equipment. But yeah, that was definitely a consideration earlier on.
Because Peter and I, we are talking a lot about how to plan or how to program equipped lifting. And then we just watched you a little bit and read about the approach you and Mike have. And we thought that that's a rather cool approach just to get some reps in, to get some movements in, not just a single, working up to a single. It's just, okay, you have two or perhaps three sets of being able to lift the technique you need. But if you do some reps, and if you do even equipped lifts with reps, then that's one of few ways to get the groove in, like to learn the technique, because that's you cannot do that for two times a week or something like that, because that would just would not be possible. I mean, perhaps it's possible, but I don't know anybody who is doing twice a week equipped squats or something like that.
Yeah. The most I've done, like, I got in my shirt twice a week for a little while, and I would do one day that was just a heavy board press or something like that in my shirt. And I think that's another thing to consider when we're talking about equipped programming, is that not every rep needs to be to a competition standard. You know, Mike would have me back down to 80% or 85% in some cases, and then I can't squat that to depth. I can't touch my chest with that weight. So I would basically just take it as far as I could and then come back up or press the bar back up. And I think those reps, despite not going all the way through the range of motion, were really helpful to again, figure out and get those, you know, get those extra backhands in.
Yeah, that's kind of important.
Yeah,
but it's a little bit of an. You have been to the gym 1.5 years ago or something like that in Vienna.
Yeah, it was in. So it would have been 3 years ago. Actually, it was in 2017 after Wilson Equipped Worlds. Yeah,
that was kind of a little bit of a shame. You have to go back when you're not deloading or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I did. I came in right after the competition, so I think I did like some high bar squats and some feet up bench.
I know exactly what you have on the head on the bar back then. I think you had 160 high bar squats. Some kind of.
I get really lazy after meets.
Yeah. No, that's completely fine, man. but that was kind of you have to redo the whole thing. Okay.
I'll come by and do some heavy stuff one day. Yeah, definitely.
So we can, Peter is doing some bench press in shirt because he's doing equipped lifting.
Nice.
And then you can join together and I just give you a lift off, okay?
No deadlift suit for you, Alex?
I tried it once in advance to the Arnold 2017 because you are allowed to wear a deadlift suit. And I think I put it on 2 months in advance to the Arnolds. This was just way too close. You know, there was no way I can learn that. And I just put on, I think, 320 on the bar, and it moved up to the knees. I never experienced something like fast like this. But suddenly, it wasn't possible to just even move the bar 1 centimeter more, you know? So I skipped that.
I think that's the thing with the tight deadlift suits, is if it's if it's a little bit too tight. I've actually I went out to Titan and visited the manufacturers in Texas there, and they gave me a couple suits to try out, and I brought two deadlift suits back, and one of them was so insanely tight. I had 335, 337 and a half on the bar, and I went to try to pull myself into position, and the bar just like popped up to my knees without, like, I wasn't trying to lift it, you know what I mean? Like, I was just trying to get into position, and same thing, it just like hit a brick wall after that point, and I was like, well, I'll set this back down now, I guess. Go fix your suit.
But you can hold it for a couple of, you know, like, say, okay, what can I do now? But you only you have your bar at knee level, you know, and then you are starting thinking, because okay, I didn't start to lift, but how can I do it now?
But here we are. Yeah, exactly.
I think it's a little bit of a, you know, when I started lifting or competing, it was, I think, 2009, so it's a couple of years ago, so 11 years ago, and I didn't think about equipped lifting at all. But the last couple of years I was working with Peter, it's much more often in my mind. And I think there should be a movement going back to equipped lifting a little bit more.
Yeah. I think we're starting to see that a little bit, even just at the Canadian level, at the national level. We're seeing a lot more people starting to get into equipment, and that's pushing people who have been in equipment for years to say, like, holy shit, I got to try to stay out ahead of these new guys. And it's just like, it's bringing the level of equipped lifting up a lot, even just locally here. So I can imagine that's probably happening elsewhere. And it's really cool to see. And as somebody who really enjoys equipped lifting, it makes me really excited.
You know, I think, sorry, Peter.
Yeah, no, I think it comes down to creating an environment to lift in, because right now at the gym, we have some kind of trainings together with the whole team. And a lot of the guys are getting interested in equipment. But if you don't have that environment, it's hard to start with equipment. I think that's the biggest problem, that raw is so big, or classic is so big right now, because you need a bar, you need weights, you need a squat rack, a bench, and that's it, pretty much.
Yeah.
So that's why I was asking how you started equipped lifting, because usually you have to have at least one or two guys that help you get in the gear, show you how to put on the shirt or wrap your knees or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a buddy wrap my knees for the first few training sessions. But honestly, I just kind of figured out a lot of it myself. I ordered the stuff. I looked on the internet to try to find anything I could. And at the time, there's really not a lot. There was like a little bit of stuff. There's some pretty decent information on Multiply equipment, which, you know, some of that stuff kind of transfers over a little bit. So that was useful. But a lot of it, yeah, I just kind of stuffed myself in there and put a bar on my back and was like, well, you four guys mind spotting me for a sec? I don't know how this is going to go.
What do you think is the most important thing when it comes down to performance? I mean, is it the training program? Is it the environment? Is it just the motivation of every lifter itself? But what do you think is the universal thing you say, okay, that has to be in it, otherwise you won't get it?
And I think like this is a little bit fresh in my head, because I had a cool conversation with a couple of guys a few days ago, and we ended up kind of talking about something similar. But I think the big thing, like, for successful lifters is that they just fall in love with lifting weights before there's any competition, before there's any records, before there's any weight classes, before any of that kind of stuff. You just have to fall in love with just doing the thing, because those other sort of motivators and the feelings of success and being on the podium and those kinds of things, like, those aren't always going to be there. You know, if you get injured and you have to go token your squat at a meet, like, yeah, you should probably still do it so that you can train your bench, so that you can train your deadlift. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be able to make those decisions. And I think you need to have a very, like, internally motivated respect for the process and a lot of just stick-with-itness, I guess, if you want to call it that. But I think that's probably one of the biggest things, is like time spent under the bar, right? The longer you can train and the more work you can get in, the stronger you're going to get.
Absolutely. How do you do that now? I mean, is it possible for you to go to Calgary Barbell and train a little bit, or do you have equipment at home?
Not right now. So I have, this was probably 2.5 weeks ago. The Canadian and provincial governments were starting to crack down on closed businesses and things like that. And I kind of saw it coming. I was like, okay, this is the way things are going. And the gym's going to be closed soon. So luckily, myself, Calgary Barbell, the company, owns a few of the racks in the gym. So I took a rack and a bar, and I think I have about 395 kilos downstairs in my basement. And I emailed the condo board and was like, hey, there's this big room in the basement that nobody uses for anything. Do you think I could put a squat rack in there? And 5 out of 5 people on the condo board said, yep, go ahead, have at her. And so, yeah, now I train down there, and it's cool. A little bit limited. Obviously, I don't have squatters other than my wife. Definitely miss the community a lot and yep. some of the other pieces of equipment and things like that. But I'm very fortunate and very happy and very lucky and thankful that I have that set up right now. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Peter, for example, I have a squat combo in my living room, right here on the right side. And Peter just rent a container where we put just a squat rack out of the gym and brought it to the container. So he's training in a container. So it's a kind of containment. you have to make adjustments. But what you said, that missing the community, I think that's the second biggest part of the whole thing. You know, if you have just one squat rack and 10 people, but everybody is motivated, that's even better if you have 10 squat racks and 10 people. You know, that's so much important. I think that changed everything. You know, you can train for your own for a couple of weeks, but if there is serious stuff going on left and right and everybody is motivated and just keeps you pushing and so on, that's very important, I think.
Yeah, and I think that kind of ties back to what I was talking about with the Canadian equipped lifting and just like seeing other people doing crazy shit. You know, for example, I always use the idea of like, okay, so you go to a gym like ours or like Das Gym, and you see, you know, 10 people pulling over 600 pounds or pulling over 275 kilos. And if you walk in there and that's the norm, you know, like most of the medium strong guys are pulling 275 kilos. You go in there and you're like, well, yeah, I'm obviously going to pull 275 at least. Everybody else is doing it. Yeah. But if you go into a commercial gym and the guy who pulls 200 kilos, everybody's like, oh my God, you see that? Yeah. That guy's crazy. You know, then it sets a totally different standard. And I think that really opens you up mentally when you start thinking like, yeah, there's no reason I can't accomplish this. There's no reason I can't do that. Mm-hmm. And you expect yourself to get stronger. You expect those results because everybody around you is getting those results and everybody around you is getting stronger. And it feeds off of itself. And yeah, it's I definitely agree that is immensely important.
Mm-hmm. That's why in the last couple of months, I watched a lot of videos of Westside, and it's not. I mean, there are a lot of cool stuff going on. I mean, even there, I think that the theory behind the whole thing is not that bad. You know, they have really cool things going on, but the community is just, you know, that was the that's a big difference. The community is the big difference. It's not the training program. It's not the, you know, it's okay. Of course, it's the drugs, but the community, why they are so much ahead of all the other drug lifters.
Well, exactly.
It's because they are just lifting in the community. You cannot duplicate that when you're on your own, for example.
Yeah. From watching that documentary, West Side versus the World or whatever, was that like they didn't expect you to lift 275 kilos. They expected you to break every record in the books and be a goddamn world champion. You know what I mean? Like there was no way, no other way about it. And like, if you weren't committed to that, then get the hell out.
Yeah. I think that's
and I don't think that's for everybody, obviously, no. But like if that's your goal, like those are probably the people you want to be around. To a point, you know.
Yeah, at least during training.
Yeah.
I get out again. But we had a cool question of one of our national lifters, Jan-Derek Andreas, and he told Peter to ask you, what do you do that your suit doesn't slip up on the legs from repetition to repetition or from set to set? Is there a way you can prohibit that or prevent that?
Squat suit or deadlift suit?
Squat suit.
Squat suit. So my squat suit, I have huge quads and it just stays put.
Yeah,
I'm gonna tell him that.
But there are some tricks that exist out there, and one of them is chalking. You can chalk the inside of your suit, or sorry, your leg, where you want the suit to stop, and that'll really help stick it in place. I haven't really used that suit because honestly, my deadlift suit, I wear it, I let it ride up pretty high because I try to kind of, I'm okay getting less out of the suit for the sake of getting into a better position with my deadlift. Yeah. But the squat suit, honestly, it just kind of stops because my quads are really big. But if you are running into issues with it sliding up, chalk your leg right where you want it to stop all the way around and that'll stop it.
I just tell him about your quads, okay?
Sure.
because that's a way to make him jealous, so that's good. But Andy has, it's a rather big quads too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the problem is when you have big quads and then the quads are, when it comes to the hip and they're going in a bit, then the suit slides up and it's just a pain in the ass to get the suit off.
But you also have to have big adductors. And Rice has big adductors too, so that's it's also important.
I think it's like it's also the genetics of my quads because I have really big VMOs, like the inside part there. And so a lot of the bulk of my quad is down lower, or no. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Anyways, just get big legs.
That's good.
Big legs, big hips.
I watched your squat videos from your last competition, and I saw your suit is kind of low, isn't it?
My squat suit?
At the hips. Yeah, at the hips.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't really have much to compare it to. I don't know if I ride it intentionally low, but that's just kind of where it goes to, and that's where it feels comfortable, I guess.
Okay. Because if I don't come along very good with the Super Centurion right now.
Okay.
But if I wear it that low, then my hips tilt completely on the bottom of the squat.
Yeah. I think that happens to me to an extent in my squat. But I think that's also part of how I normally squat. So I don't think that disrupts me too much from my usual pattern. And I think that's maybe why I'm able to wear that a little bit lower.
We're losing Alex right now.
No. You're not losing me. I just watched a bench video of Bryce.
Uh-oh.
Because I... No. Because I just wanted to make... For example, what's interesting for me right now, because I'm just read or talk to people about that, but how do you... utilize the leg drive? I mean, do you just, for example, how do you set yourself up? What do you think about how do you use your legs during bench pressing?
So for me, the leg drive is a really like consistent thing. I try to have a maximal amount of leg drive from the time that I set my butt down on the bench.
Yeah.
Okay. And I usually, so I guess that's one of the other things is I usually unrack with my butt up in the air.
Yeah.
So that I'm in like a maximal sort of arch position so that I have as much pressure on my traps as possible. Once I've unracked the bar, I barely set my butt down, like let my butt just kind of float on the bench so that I have to give up as little leg drive as possible. And then I try to basically just keep that on the whole time. So I know there's a lot of people who are a little bit more relaxed and then right as they go to press, there's this big jolt of leg drive. And I think that's maybe more like what you would kind of think of if somebody started talking about leg drive. But basically I use my legs to reinforce my position so that absolutely nothing moves in my upper body.
I'm really glad you said that because I think that is what leg drive is all about. Because if you just have some kind of push when you're down there, there's a lot of chance raising your butt or, so, for example, losing the position.
Or losing the position. Like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yesterday, I also think holding it the whole time, it's hard, but it's in the long run, it's the better way.
I had a conversation yesterday with Andy Champ. Do you know him? He's the 93 lifter from Great Britain.
I think I know the name.
He has a pretty good bench in the 93 class. He benches, I think, about 270 or around that, 275. But he told me exactly the same. He's trying to create as much tension as possible and holding the tension the whole time and not doing some kind of bump off the chest.
I think especially in equipment, you probably don't see too many people with that like loose, jolty kind of leg drive because it's just going to change your chest height so much and that inconsistency is just going to make it impossible to try to use a shirt, I think.
Yeah, but that is why equipped lifting just can raise raw lifting even to another level, you know, because you have to emphasize technique so much that you just cannot lose, for example, tension during your bench press. You just cannot let the bar sink in, or for some it's okay to sink in that you can for a couple of hours, but on the other hand, it's so much worse if you lose technique in equipped lifting than in raw lifting, and that we all can learn from that, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think that there are things for sure that I've learned equipped lifting that have really carried over to my raw lifting. I think more so on the deadlift, less so on the squat. My equipped squat feels a lot like my raw squat. But on the bench for sure. So on the bench in your shirt, you kind of get that pop off the chest. But if you're not positioned correctly and you don't try to use that momentum to finish the rep and kind of like transition through to the triceps, I feel like it makes a really, really rough sticking point. And once I started being able to think about my raw bench in that same way of kind of nailing that transition to finishing with the triceps, it really helped the bench. Mm-hmm. And then in regards to the deadlift, like forcing that last little bit of extension to get just that tiny little bit more optimized position in the deadlift before I started the lift, which was something you can really feel in the suit because it hurts that much more. like the more your deadlift hurts before you start in terms of your skin, probably the better position you're in your suit. But that feedback, I think, really helped me kind of fine tune my raw deadlift position.
That's cool. He's working with his nociceptors. That's a new approach to lifting. how often do you have a training schedule? Training 4 times a week?
Yeah, 4 days a week.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And your equipped lifting days are kind of longer than your raw days.
Oh God, yeah. My big equipped day, which is usually the first day of the week. I think usually takes 3.5 or 4 hours, and to do that amount of work for the number of reps that I do, it would probably take me 1.5 hours to do it raw, but because it's equipped, it just there's a lot more to it, a lot more plate loading, a lot more knee wrapping and putting the straps up and putting the belt on and getting four spotters and on and on and on. Yeah.
And how do you manage that with your wife, for example? Is she lifting too, or
she lifts? She's also just. Like, I've been doing this since before we met, and she's also just incredibly supportive. And just like, she knows when I get into these big, aggressive, rough training cycles, she knows I'm going to forget a lot of shit and not be super helpful around the house sometimes. And she'll go out of her way to make my life a little bit easier during those times, because, you know, I try really hard when I'm not prepping for a big equipped meet to be pretty mindful of those things that I'm probably going to mess up as I start to get further into the training cycle. It's a lot of give and take, but really she's just great.
Yeah, that's cool. It is important. You know, you got to know my girlfriend in Calgary when she was asking you if you lift too.
Yeah.
She just told me that I should tell you that.
No, I remember that. There was a trainer there who was just so blown away that she didn't know who I was. And I was like, well, what? You can't just like expect everybody to know who somebody is. And she was like, I don't really follow men's lifting. And I was like, that's cool. I'm Bryce. Like,
that was me.
You don't know who I am.
I was deadlifting in the suit there.
That was
him. Oh yeah. There was one of the coaches that trains at our gym is who I was talking about. This guy Curtis.
Okay.
And he was like, "You don't know who he is." Okay. And I was like, "It's okay, man. Like, that doesn't hurt my feelings or anything. Like, I don't go around expecting people to know who I am."
Well, you know, that's cool because she for her everybody's the same. You know, if you lift big weights, if you don't.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good attitude to have.
Yeah. It's very important to squat for her. If for example, if I stop squatting, I had to get out of the house. for a couple of years. Yeah, okay.
How hard do you find it to deal with the situation right now that there is no international competition fixed right now, and nobody of us knows if the Worlds, because it's a qualifying year?
Yeah.
How do you do with your programming schedule?
So right now, I was getting ready for North Americans in July in the Cayman Islands, and as it stands, I'm still training for that. I mean, I don't know. I'll talk to Mike when we get a little closer and learn a little more, and if I have to stay raw for a while because I'm training in my basement till September, like, so be it. You know, I'm not going to, like, I honestly, and I saw Natalie Hansen, if you guys know who she is. I think she posted something about, like, she's still training as if there's a meet ahead because she doesn't know any other way to live her life. And I was like, yep, I totally get that. Like, if I don't have something to work towards, like, I'm going to be kind of a mess probably. So in my head, a lot of these things are going to happen at some point. I don't, just because I don't know when, doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to change my approach. So, you know, once things get a little more clear in terms of how long this situation is going to be like this, then we'll make some changes. But for now, yeah, like, I'm putting on a little bit of body weight, just like the plan says, and gonna, you know, maybe get into the equipment before long, I hope. And if not, then I'll just get strong as hell raw in my basement. I mean, I don't know.
Sounds great too. So
yeah, it's a win-win, really.
Yeah, you're right. So what about your, you know, your online, you're doing a lot of coaching.
Yeah.
So how do you work with your clients, for example, now, because they don't have perhaps some kind of equipment at home or something like that. Do they still stick with you, or do you recognize that some of them, okay, they just cannot afford it? That anymore, or they cannot train anymore, or how do you do that now?
Yeah, it's a case by case basis. Mm. I have some clients who obviously have no access to a gym, so you know, I put their payments on hold. I'm not going to charge them for services they're not getting. Obviously, I think that's unethical and stupid. So, you know, I tried to help them put together a little bodyweight training thing that they can do at home, and if they have questions, they can still ask me. I'm not going to like cut them off. But I'm also lucky to have a lot of clients who are either gym owners. So now their gym is basically just their own personal gym, or people who have, garage gyms and things like that. And, a lot of my clients have just scavenged whatever they can from wherever they can. And, you know, I have one guy who was doing Steinborn squats with like 350 pounds the other day because he's like, I don't have a rack, but I'm not going to squat, you know? So he's doing like 15 rep RDLs because he only has so many plates, and like floor presses, just trying to like roll it onto himself and press it off, and Steinborn squats and like whatever he can do, you know? So there's a lot of that kind of stuff. And we're going to, so Calgary Barbell has some plans. We're going to give some free like body weight monthly group programming type stuff, and just like try to give people a little bit of direction with that kind of thing. And then we're going to do a really cheap program that we're going to sell like at home for people who literally just have a barbell and a rack. I mean, we'll try to continue to work as much as we can with a couple of our trainers. Probably the majority of their income came from in-person stuff. So we'll see how we can figure that kind of thing out. And still, you know, obviously support, our employees, but, it's all kind of still shaken out with some of the government stimulus packages and some of that kind of stuff. So as with most things, a lot of that sort of future of things is a little bit uncertain, but luckily a fair bit of our business is online. We've started doing some more live streams, a couple extra times a week, because I was feeling really bored and useless and just like I wasn't doing anything with it, just playing a lot of video games and just wasting my time. So now we're doing more live streams, and that actually feels like something useful. So
yeah,
it's kind of just figuring out whatever the new normal is, I guess.
You're absolutely right. I think that is one of the, I don't want to use the word, but that's one of the cool things in this situation that you see so many people doing crazy stuff. You know, I'm doing bench presses on a boxing bag and the barbell or some kind of thing is lying on some bricks and so on. Yeah. And they're figuring out it's much better for their shoulder blades, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows, man?
Yeah, yeah, or the Steinbrenn squat. I mean, this guy you have, he will have a hip like or a waist like this after this, you know, after this month of Steinbrenn squat. So you don't need to mind his obliques anymore. Never.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you've seen like probably seen those people building those squat racks, and it's just it's vertical 2x4s at different heights in buckets of concrete, and there's like a bench height and a squat height. And they're just building benches out of like 2x6 and just, you know, like doing whatever you got to do. Right. There's the one guy, Jonathan Keiko, he's like unracking off of chairs for his bench press. And just like, yeah, man, people are doing crazy shit. And it's pretty cool to see. I agree.
Yeah. That's super cool. So you also, yesterday you said you had a big training session. So you're glad you can sit on one spot now.
Yeah. I was talking to my wife before bed last night, the whole like, oh, you know, what's your day look like tomorrow? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, I might train, you know, and I got out of bed this morning. I was like, oh, I'm not training today. I'm going to take the day and eat and relax and I'll do some more lifting tomorrow.
That's good.
But it's funny that not training is making it even worse because I was not able to squat for 2 weeks right now. And I got the rack yesterday and I did squats today. It just feels like you get a everything is rusty. Everything is cracking on the first squat down. Even if I did some mobility and goblet squats, shit like that. But it's not a comparison to a barbell movement.
You did goblet squats with your cat.
Yeah.
And your cat is fat, but not that fat.
Yeah, not that fat. But yeah. So not training makes it even worse.
So Bryce, hopefully you can, the whole situation will, I'm pretty sure the whole situation will get over sooner or later. And when you're in Europe again, we will be proud to have you here in the gym again.
I'd be incredibly happy to come see it again. Everybody that I talk to and I have like I chat with a few touring musicians every so often and follow a couple of musicians who like also lift, and every time they go over to that area of the world, I'm like, dude, if you go one place, if you go to one gym, you have to go to Das Gym in Vienna. It's just like it's such a spectacle and such an amazing, crazy, unique gym that there's no other place like it. It's amazing.
You know, we changed it. I think you will not recognize it anymore because everything just improved. We have now our own kitchen there. So Martina, for example, is cooking everything fresh. And so if you want to go up to from 160.7, like in your competition, to 120, you're in the right place. Okay?
Perfect. That's excellent.
Yeah. So thank you very much.
We hopefully meet in Stavanger this year.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably Alex is also there.
Yeah. Awesome. Hopefully. So I will wrap. Is it equipped, right?
Yeah. It's the qualifier for the World Games.
I will just learn to make the best knee reps ever, okay?
Yeah, because we're going to need you, because if they're skipping Europeans this year, we're going to send 293s to Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to need Alex there.
Yeah, I'm there.
Hopefully we're going to chat there again.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome.
So thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Super cool. And have a nice morning. With the biggest cup of coffee I've ever seen on Skype. And greetings to your wife.
Yes, absolutely. I'll pass that along. It's always good to, especially in these times where we don't necessarily have a lot of social interaction, it's nice to do things like these podcasts and just talk to some other meatheads and shoot the shit about training and talk about lifting stuff, because, you know, we don't get to do that between sets right now.
you were right.
Oh, yeah.
That's super cool. Yeah, actually, yeah. I do it between sets. I will do some core work now before I do some squats. So I do it between exercises. Okay, Bryce, thank you very much for everything.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Ciao.